and welcome to a brand new episode of the All For One podcast with me, Jamie Lowe, and I'm very glad to have you with us today. This is the show where myself and a panel of people living with type 1 diabetes get real about life with type 1 and celebrate the incredible people who are making our lives a little bit better. A massive thank you if you are a returning listener, and if it's your first time here, then welcome. Thank you for downloading. Seriously, it's so great to have so many listeners this early on into the life of this podcast, but we need more. So please make sure you're spreading the word and telling the world about this show. Actually, it would really help us out if you could leave us a review wherever you listen to this show. We're on all the big ones, Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts. And remember, this is not just my show, this is our show. So please get in touch, get involved. As always, the door is open. But before we get into the main show, I just wanted to give a quick shout out to some amazing listeners who've been sharing the show. We've now got four 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, and a special thank you to Ruth Gething, who left us a nice review, and also a shout out to Meg Buckle, who is the diabetic dog walker on Instagram. She sent us a nice email, and we'll be hearing from her in a future show, I'm sure. So if you want a shout out on the show, then give the podcast a share or leave us a review. It's very much appreciated. So over the next hour or so, myself and a panel of people in your ears will be discussing staying sporty with type 1. We'll have an update on the latest tech in the type 1 world, and we'll be heading to the start line of the Swansea Half Marathon a little later on too. Also, listen out for how you can get involved with this very podcast. That's all on the way. But before all of that, let me introduce you to today's incredible panel. First up, it's Chris Brighty. So Chris is the founder of the Diabetes Football Community. He also founded the UK's first all-diabetic futsal team, who are going to be heading to a very important competition soon. Is that right, Chris?
It is indeed, Jamie. Thanks for having me on, mate.
It's all right. So what is the competition? Tell me all about it.
So we're heading off to a championships called Di Euro. So it's the lead futsal competition, and from what I know, the lead kind of football competition for people with diabetes in Europe. So
amazing.
We're taking a team of 11 players, all with type 1 diabetes, out to Kiev on the 21st of July.
And fantastic.
To represent the UK.
Well, good luck with that. Our next panel member is David Stevens, who is very active on Twitter as Mr. Diabetes. He's often found at various diabetes events across the country. What was your most recent event that you attended, David?
The most recent one was the TAD Talk in Bristol. So, yeah.
Yes. Which I saw you at. We're going to be hearing about the TAD Talks a little later on in the show. Also, Callie Roberts is back, a returning panellist to the All For One podcast. She's training to be a nurse and is very active on social media as Type 1 Cal. I'm loving your Instagram stories, Callie. You really put quite a bit of effort into them.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, just like being active in the community, really, and just connecting with people, so...
Yes, I've definitely taken a bit of Insta inspiration from you. But over the coming months, we'll be hearing from different voices on the panel. So if you'd like to be involved, then send me a quick email to contactall41@gmail.com. Remember, folks, that is the number 4, but the letters O-N-E. Now, that explanation seems to be working because David managed to send me an email and also Meg Buckle did. So I think we're all getting what's going on with the email address. But first up today, we'll be talking exercise and T1D. We'll be going to the start line of the Swansea Half Marathon in a bit, and we've got a real game changer in diabetes sport on the show today. So let's start with Chris. You've got a lot of projects that have got quite a bit of media attention, to be fair, and a first for the UK. So this futsal team was the first all-diabetic futsal team, wasn't it, in the UK?
Yeah, so we have two teams. We have a team that's based out of Worcester. It's our lead United Kingdom team. We encourage people with type 1. And to be honest, I've never stipulated that it should only be type 1, but that seems to be the sort of demographic that turns up. And basically, we bring in people with diabetes to the University of Worcester, and we are encouraging essentially diabetic participation in futsal. And we've therefore grown a team out of that's spiraled really into something bigger. So we started last year. Our first session was April 2018. We went to our first ever all diabetes tournament, the Di Euros, in July 2018. And then ever since then, really, it's grown really quickly. People saw the opportunity, and we've had now probably in excess of 35, 40 Type 1s show interest in getting involved in the UK team.
Amazing.
And then we've had a team now start in London that's all diabetic, and they are the first all Type 1 team to participate in a mainstream futsal league as well. So we're trying to set diabetes participation alight, really, and sort of dispel some of the stereotypes around exercising with the condition.
Yeah, so are you finding that maybe these people that you are playing with have fallen away from football since receiving a diagnosis? Are they football players that just want to play with people that understand what their gameplay is like living with type 1 diabetes?
There's been a bit of both. We've had players that are just keen to see what the opportunity is like, keen to talk to others with living with the condition, just to try and understand if there's something that they can learn from others. We obviously have a sort of a variety of standards of players that come in. So we've got some that are very used to sort of leisurely playing, maybe more amateur. Then we've got others that have been playing semi-professional football, maybe have been paid. We've had a former professional turn up that's with type 1 as well. So we've had a real variety, but very much keen to see what it was all about and to learn from others. And then we have at the other end of the spectrum, I think probably two or three players that have actually stopped or found it difficult or been diagnosed recently and haven't had the confidence to go back to playing until they've been maybe got involved and seen TDFC and seen the diabetes football community stuff. And we've helped at least two or three with that.
Fantastic. And for anyone that doesn't know, because I think I maybe know, but I'm not sure if it's a memory that I've made up or not, what is futsal?
Yeah, so futsal is FIFA's official format for five-a-side football. It's
yes.
Basically a bit of a hybrid between handball and basketball, and obviously with football in the fact that you're using your feet. So it's got some of the rules from basketball and some of the rules from handball involved. And it's a fast-paced game, lots of chances, excitement. And for people with diabetes, I actually think it's probably one of the best formats of the game of football, because essentially you roll on, roll off substitutions. So you can play a few minutes and then come off. And I actually come off and check my blood glucose levels. And then I sit on the side for 3 or 4 minutes. And then I go back on for 5, 6 minutes. So you've got the regular opportunity to check your blood glucose levels.
Yeah, so it's almost a sport made for people with type 1 diabetes. But Callie, David, do any of you play any sport, do any sort of regular exercise?
I do a lot of walking, and that's about it.
Okay, walking is great, though, because walking is low intensity. And to be honest, walking's what I do if my insulin just doesn't seem to be working. So I'll quickly go out for a walk, and anything that just gets your heart rate just a little bit higher, I find, is what can help really cool down a hyper. So, Callie, do you do anything? Do you do any sort of sport, exercise?
Yeah, I will do any sort of sport or exercise. I've been that type of person since I was little. I'll just do anything.
And have you found that your diagnosis has changed the way that you get involved with sport and exercise?
To be honest, no, for me, just because I was diagnosed when I was 10, and my nurses at the time were like, you don't have to stop doing anything that you want to do, basically. So I just carried on as soon as I was diagnosed, doing everything I'd always done.
Well, that's a
and
great
I think
attitude.
That was really helpful for me. Yeah, so I just went back to school and started doing every single thing I did beforehand, just again.
Fantastic. And Chris, do you work with any sort of, I mean, I'm not sure what age your players are, but do you work with maybe worried parents? Do you work with trying to make people understand that, you know, okay, so diabetes is a thing, and exercise plus diabetes can cause disaster if you let it, but it doesn't have to be like that? And do you sort of work through people's worries and concerns to allow people to get back into football without, you know, having the stress of someone on the touchline being very worried about you?
Yeah, well, 100%. I mean, It's something that, even in my own experience, is something that I always wanted to get across with the work with the diabetes football community, is that my parents were very much like, Chris, it's never going to stop you. You can do what you want to do. I had good nurses as well that had that similar attitude. So it's something that I try a lot to get across to parents, is that you need to let them like live their life. They need to be able to push themselves and test it out. And they've never been safer, in my view, in terms of kids now with type 1. A lot of them are using technology. A lot of them have got great pumps. They've got schools that are now well rehearsed in how to look after people with type 1. All of these things didn't exist when I was diagnosed 20 years ago. So they're in safe hands. I think they just need to remember that they can push themselves. And that's the kind of mentality thing that I try and get across, is that that parents can't be too afraid to... they almost have wrapped them up in cotton wool and don't allow them to do these things. And sport and exercise is such an important thing for so many people that I encourage that all of the time, really. And we talk to lots of parents and children, parents of kids with type 1.
Yeah, so what I was also going to add to this discussion is, because we're going to touch on it later, actually, but just the sense of being somewhere with other people with type 1, that must just be an amazing thing for the people in your team, because like I guess we all experience, well, maybe not you, Chris, because you're very connected with lots of people with type 1 diabetes, but other people might not ever see another person with type 1 diabetes for several months. And I'm sure there's people out there that have never met another person in person with the same condition. So just being in a space with other people that know what you're going through is, again, such, I don't know, it just seems to take a weight off your shoulders, doesn't it? Does anyone else get that?
I would say the same. I think you're having that sort of almost like safety net. And for a long time, I never spoke to anybody with type 1, really. I think it's gone like full circle for me now, but it makes such a huge difference when you can just turn to somebody that understands exactly what you're going through, understands the hypos in the middle of the night or the hypers or whatever it is. It just gives you it takes a weight off.
Yeah, absolutely. So Callie, how would you find that? Because you're quite active on social media, and you know there's quite a strong diabetic online community, but how would you go about interacting with people with the same condition as you?
When I was younger, because I didn't know anyone with diabetes either, so when I got to my teenage years, it was quite difficult for me because I just started rebelling because I didn't know anyone else. I took it quite bad. I didn't want to do things because I was the only one. But ever since I started meeting people online, I met a few people like in person, and it's just made it so much easier. Just being able to talk to people that just understand what you're going through or have been through similar experiences as yourselves. It's just amazing. And I love being on Instagram and talking to people. It's just a nice place to go. If you had a bad day of your diabetes, or a good day, you can pull it online and other people can just relate to you.
Absolutely. And David, I guess that's something that you've really, you know, taken and ran with, because I think I remember following you almost the next week after I was diagnosed, because that's the first place I went, social media. And then I started seeing posts from you on Twitter. So that's something that you take very seriously, is, you know, being out there online as someone with diabetes. I mean, your Twitter handle is at Mr. Diabetes.
Yeah, so people call me Di because I'm from Wales, so people call people with David Di. So I use that and then just put it as my name as Mr. Diabetes. I have had various other social media names, but there was a lot of, like, I was rebelling against my diabetes. So at first, like, I wasn't taking social media or anything serious, and I wouldn't take my diabetes serious. So I used to rebel online. So I used to troll a lot and stuff like that. But then I found confidence in my diabetes, and then I found confidence in using social media to my advantage. And that's because I went and met people in real life and stuff, and they were like, you need to calm it down on social media and stuff like that. So I gained more confidence, and then I've just used social media to my advantage and meeting people on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook groups. So yeah, it has been pretty like a whirlwind, actually, because I only expected like 100 or 200 people to follow me on Twitter, but it's just going up and up and up and up. So, and it's meeting new people, and obviously them sharing their story to me and me sharing my story, it builds up that relationship. So I also went to TAD Talk in Bristol, and there was a guy sitting on his own. So we called him over because we didn't want him sitting on his own throughout an event. And we like made a connection through that. And now we've stayed in contact as well because of that. So yeah, it's just really nice to like make sure people aren't alone whilst they're getting diagnosed or feeling alone sort of thing. So yeah.
Brilliant. And I guess, Chris, social media has helped no end in spreading the message about your teams, because I'm sure, I think there's some sort of connection between your diabetes football community and Lachlan Murdoch all the way in Scotland, who was our type one to watch on the first episode. There's some sort of connection there, and I'm guessing that was spread through online and social media and that sort of thing.
Absolutely, yeah. You nailed it. So, yeah, Leslie and Lachlan were following the diabetes football community at the very beginning. I remember doing some Facebook live chats on our page, and actually they were commenting, asking me questions, etc., about what we were up to and the plans and stuff. So yeah, and I don't know. I mean, you'd have to ask them, but I hope in some way some of what we've done with them and supported with other families might have inspired them, and certainly I now know that Leslie and Lachlan are certainly supporting TDFC. I went up there to see them do and take on the stadium marathon. So I walked to one of the stadiums with Lachlan and Leslie, and these things aren't possible without social media. Social media changed the world in terms of how you can connect with people with diabetes. The diabetes football community would not exist without how I use social media to begin with. And it's helped me. It's been a massive, I would call it almost therapy. It's helped me come out of my shell with my diabetes, because for a very long time in sport, I chose to hide it. And then this has allowed me to come full circle and really, really help others, and also help myself, to be honest, in the way that I now talk about the condition.
Yeah, and I would echo all of that. I mean, I was speaking to someone that I know, and I'm not going to say too many details about them, because they themselves aren't wanting to be forthcoming about their condition just yet. And they we were chatting on Instagram, and then all of a sudden they were like, oh my God, you're type 1 diabetic. I didn't realize. And then I was like, oh my God, you're type 1 diabetic. I didn't realize. And then they said, well, I don't really feel like sharing it just yet. And I was like, well, mate, you've got quite a considerable platform, and it's going to do so many great things, not only for you, but for so many people, if you do open up and share about it. Because for me, I was in hospital with DKA because I didn't know the symptoms. So I myself made it a mission of myself to chat about diabetes at any opportunity I had, because that other person who doesn't know the symptoms might stumble across a video or a podcast or something, and then they know when it begins to happen to them. But we're going to leave that there and return to social media a little later. How does sport get to social media? But we're going to be returning to sport and social media, both of those topics, a little later on. We'll be hearing what you guys have been sending in to the show too. But if you want to get involved in the conversation, you can do so very, very easily. You can get in touch on the socials. We're on Instagram at @all41insta. We're on Twitter at @all41tweet. Or you can email the show. That's contact@all41@gmail.com. Just a reminder, I know you're tired of me saying this. That's the number 4 and the letters O-N-E. Okay, so a few weekends ago, I ran a half marathon for the first time ever. I might have crossed the finish line with a few tears in my eyes because it was probably a bit too much running than I was prepared for. But nevertheless, I was supporting Paul Coker, who is a panelist here at the All For One podcast, and he runs the One Bloody Drop website. And he had around 40 runners with type 1 taking part. So I met up with them at the start line to hear how they plan to take on the 13.1 mile course. So it's a little bit of a gloomy day in Swansea, slightly warm. There's a nice, cool sea breeze coming onto us right now, but I found Team Type 1. I'm a little bit late getting to the race, so I can't be wearing my Team Type 1 shirt, but I have found them. They're on in bright green t-shirts and vests with the OneBloodyDrop.com logo, and I'm here with founder Paul Coker. So Paul, Today is the big day. We've been building up to this one. Lots of type 1 runners taking part in the Swansea Half Marathon.
Yeah, we think there's about 40 runners with type 1 taking part today. So sadly, we're not breaking the record from last year. But, you know, it's still a great turnout and people are just demonstrating that type 1 diabetes does not stop you.
Absolutely. And in your hand, you are holding a bear with an Omnipod on it. Tell me a little bit about Arthur the Bear. What's his story?
So Arthur the Bear belongs to a family of bears, which are the Insulin Gang Travelling Bears. There's about 60 of these and they travel around the world and they stay with the family for a month. And then the family write a diary for the bear and they send the bear and its diary off to the next family. So Arthur's joined me for the run today. We're going to create great diary entries and loads of photos, and then we're sending it on to another family so that children can understand that they're not alone with diabetes.
And you are a bit like me, not completely 100% prepared for the race, but it's not about the winning for you, is it, Paul?
No, I never celebrate a finish time. I always celebrate the finish line. So for me, I've been doing this for years and I've got a big team that come out and do this, and I just want to help people to get across the line. So last year I had my personal worst and I did this in 3 hours and 40 minutes, and it was the best half marathon I've ever run, which is far better than my personal best time. You know, as I say, it's near about the time.
Well, I'm sticking out a sore thumb with Team Type 1 now in my blue Diabetes UK vest, but we'll change that after the race. I'll come and pick up my One Bloody Drop t-shirt, but let me speak to you, sir. What's your name?
Peter.
So tell me about what your story is. What brings you here to this particular half marathon?
Well, this guy, Paul, he persuaded me, twisted my arm and said, yeah, you can do it, Pete. I'm a hiker, really, and this is only the second half marathon I've ever done. I did last year and this one.
Okay.
But it's a great honour to be here, even though I'm going to come very, very way back. Okay. So that between us, Paul and I have had type 1 for 104 years.
Ah, wow, okay. And what am I? I'll make it 107, because I'm 3 years in. So there we go, I'm adding to the total. So being at the back of the start line, I guess we sort of have to wait a fair few minutes before we actually get to begin our race. But I'm here with two more ladies running for Team Type 1. What's your name, please?
Birgitta.
And what's your name, please?
Luisa.
So, ladies, you're going to be taking part in the Swansea Half Marathon for Team Type 1. Have you done much training? Because I haven't.
You always feel that you haven't done enough, but some training, yes.
How are you planning to tackle this half marathon and make sure you can do it safely?
Just look in my bag.
So in Brigitte's bag, she's got two bum bags placed on her back. She's got two packs of Dextro energy tablets and lots of other things in there. I'm feeling a bit underprepared. I only brought a couple of bags of Haribos.
You know where you should find the stuff if you need something.
Yeah, so if I start to go hypo, I'll be coming to find Brigitte. So
I've got plenty of flapjacks for you if you need any. I need a shopping trolley, not a bum bag.
The last time I did a race, I was using Dextro energy tablets, and I found those really difficult to chew and run. Maybe it's a guy thing. I just couldn't make all my body work. But flapjacks and a half marathon. Is that a tried and tested method?
No. And dextrose. I've got everything here because I don't know what I'm going to need.
So do you use MDI, a pod or a pump?
I've got a Libra with a Bluetooth reader on top of it, and an insulin pump as well, Medtronic one. Mm-hmm. So yeah, which I find quite useful for running. Mm-hmm. So hopefully they're going to work well for me today.
And do you find something like this coming out as a group, you know, we're a team of about 40 type 1s, even more people running for Diabetes UK. Do you feel that that's like a really nice thing to all come together and spread awareness?
Yeah, really exciting as well. It's really motivating to meet other people with type 1. It's the best thing about running today, definitely.
Well, that was the Swansea Half Marathon, or the start line at least. I didn't record anything when I got to the finish line because I was in no fit state. It was a very tough race. I really, really wish I'd have trained. I actually had never run that far before in my life, but I guess I proved something to myself doing it. But another interesting thing is that on that day, I was just using my pump and testing my blood sugar with a blood sugar monitor. But the next day, I went along to my DSN and I left with a Freestyle Libre prescription, and I'm over the moon about it. I mean, I know Chris, you use Dexcom. Callie, you use a Freestyle Libre too. David, what do you use? Have you managed to get a prescription yet for Freestyle Libre?
So I campaigned for Freestyle Libre and I was one of the first people lucky enough to get it on prescription in the UK.
Amazing.
I no longer use Freestyle Libre. I am currently on Dexcom for another month and a little bit.
Cool.
But I am changing over to Guardian sensors on August the 14th because I'm getting a new insulin pump.
Wow, okay.
So I'm going on to the Medtronic 670G with funded sensors. So it's kind of a big step, but I'm excited to go onto that pump. So yeah.
And just personally, just having the Freestyle Libre, which I think on the next update, which is in October, I believe, it's going to essentially turn into a CGM. That my ability to just do sport and exercise on the fly has just increased rapidly. And I'm so grateful because before I would really have to take steps and plan. But now I've just got so much more data and so much more information that can, you know, educate me in what I need to do to be able to go for a run. So Chris, seeing as you are, you know, the top man at a team full of people with diabetes, do you find that people using the Dexcoms and the Libras, they have a better time with it as opposed to those who are still relying on the fingerprint tests?
I think what you've just said about it is bang on. I think their ability to go on the fly is a little bit better, but I actually think sometimes the guys that are more prepped and have actually planned their routine and plan what they're doing in front, because maybe they're still on fingerprint testing, sometimes actually are getting better results in terms of not having hypos, etc. within it. Because I'm not saying we're getting lazy, but we're happy to rely on the technology. Whereas yes. I was, you know, I grew up 20 years ago, and I all throughout my whole football and futsal career, part time, all of it has been, you know, apart from the last 2 years, has been built on fingerprint testing and injections. So you learn a lot of knowledge from that, and you learn a lot more about your body because you have to really be in tune with it, and you have to do a lot of testing. And I had to build a lot of routines, and I had to remember the routines for certain days and certain timings of things to get it right to ensure I could play. So it's a really interesting one, but I really love the fact that CGM technology is out there to support us now with sport and exercise. It does make it easier.
So Chris, so you're now on a pump and a CGM, and you said that you find that you're a lot more lazier, or not lazier, but more like, you know what I mean. So with the alerts and stuff, doesn't that stop the laziness then? And obviously when you went onto a pump, you had to test a lot more. You had to, I don't know if you was on CGM when you got onto a pump, but you would have had to do basal testing and stuff like that. So with sport, wouldn't you have found
I'm still using injections, so David. I'm on injections, but I'm on CGM at the same time. So there's I've not had to go through the whole. I know it gets quite complicated around moving on to pumps in terms of basal testing and things like that. I'm quite happy with where my HbA1c sits, and I'm quite happy with where management around sport is. So I'm almost toying with the pump idea, but at the same time, I'm quite happy to keep going in the way that I'm going at the direction. My only question mark is around the types of insulin, because something like FIASP gives you quite a quick reaction time, and sometimes when in a sporting situation when you've got limited time to make a reaction because the game's about to start, you could do with insulin working quicker sometimes if you're a little high. It's quite an interesting concept.
Well, if I just jump in here, I actually had to switch off FIAS because working in TV, it's the same thing. So in a live program, my blood sugars would rocket. And I mean rocket because, you know, it's outside, there's makeup, there's lights, there's heat, there's people in your ear, and there's loads of stress. And, you know, you want to get it right. So you're a bit nervous too. And then there's excitement. So you've got all that cortisol raising through your body, and it would just make my blood sugar shoot. So I jumped onto FIASP so I could, one, manage my blood sugars whilst working in a stressful environment, and two, because I wanted to be able to, you know, not be going for a run hyper. I wanted to, because I have quite, my NovoRapid was acting very slow, so I'd have huge long peaks, and I wanted the FIASP to combat that, and it did to start off with. But then what I would find is the smallest amount of FIASP would just sort of like hang around in my body waiting for the minute when my heart rate got going or my muscle started moving, and it would shoot me into a hypo. So I never found a happy medium between Nova Rapid or Fias, because neither of them sort of met in the middle. Fias was too fast and Nova Rapid was too slow. I'm currently back on Nova Rapid with a pump, which is where I use extended boluses, which has now sorted that out, hopefully. But I know what you mean, and it's such individual experience, and there's all of these different brands of insulin and all of these different pumps and things getting banded around. And I, for one, am sort of, you know, I'm engaged with my management and what I'm using to manage my diabetes, but then there are other people who are very, very well informed and read the papers and read the research, and I'm just not one of those. And I think, not that it gives me a disadvantage, but when I go and discuss things like this, like we are doing now, I don't necessarily have the right information to explain my experience well enough for other people to understand. Do you get where I'm coming from?
I was also on Fiasp at one point. But I found it worked perfectly, really, really good for me for the first month. And then all of a sudden, it just didn't want to work for me at all. So I would be spiking all the time. My sugars would be constantly high. So I had to switch back to Nova Rapid because of that. So people have said that it's faster. It is faster for the first month. But then I had to increase all my insulin up to 30% more to actually have it to work for me. And I was like, I don't want that much more insulin. I'd rather just stick to Nova Rapid and wait that 15 minutes than having 30% more insulin going into my body. So
I guess that's the bit that I sort of forget sometimes, is the, you know, the, because I'm sort of like, I'll get to a meal and I'll get to doing some activity and then I'll realize, oh yeah, oh wait, and I'm diabetic, I need to do things here. So I will always sort of give my insulin just before a meal. But if I had, I guess I blame a lot of it on my job. But I mean, I think I'm letting myself off lightly there. I reckon I could have a bit more foresight to think, okay, I'm about to eat soon. And I never know what I'm going to eat soon, because I always just decide as I'm, you know, what eating or, you know, making it or whatever. But if I did just give that a little bit more effort, then I probably could have a little bit better, like, after meal spike. So later on, I know I've got a pepperoni pizza with a stuffed crust sitting in the fridge. And now we've talked about this, I think I'm gonna, you know, make a promise right here to do a what do you call it, like a pre-bolus, or like a, is it a pre-bolus? And then an extended bolus. I'm gonna do 50-50 and then we'll see how that goes, because I've never once got pizza right, and it's my favourite food.
So I have a question, how long are you going to extend that for? Because I'm only asking because my hospital, I have a leaflet out now with how to eat pizza, should I say.
Oh my God, so wow.
They've tested it on a few people and stuff like that. So they've basically put how to split your doses, how to try it first, and then how to do it if it fails the first time, how to do it the second time. If it fails the second time, how to do it the third time, and on so it just keeps going, and the third time they hope that it will actually work. So basically they say, first of all, to split it for 50-50 over 2 hours, and then you can see via the graphs if you drop in the first to lower it in the first half. But like, I usually drop low, so I would do about 60 up front and then the rest later on over a 2 hour period, so I don't get that high overnight.
But so I think I'm going to go probably as much as 5 hours, because although I've just taken a heavy load of insulin, my blood sugar will stay stable. But then when all that insulin is worn off, that's when it will spike. So, and it doesn't make me low, because I think there's some sort of like, you know, the fat and the carbs are doing some magic and, you know, some black magic, and I'm not going low. But then, and I've carb counted correctly for the pizza, then I do get a spike. So I think I'm going to go 50 up front and then spread the rest of the dose over 5 hours, I think, because that's I think I'm going to try that. But I'm very interested to see that leaflet, so if you can send me a few screenshots of that, that'd be amazing.
I'll have to try and find it and then send it to you. I don't know amazing. Where I put it.
Well, I'm not sure how we got from half marathons to eating pizza, but still to come today, we'll be heading to the Bristol Talking About Diabetes Tour event. Also, we'll reveal this month's Type 1 to Watch, where we feature someone doing amazing work for the community. But first, I want to talk about isolation, because despite the internet being a great place, it could be months before you meet another person with type 1 diabetes. Now, we've already touched on this, and Chris, you're doing great things by your sports teams and getting people together in, you know, the same space. And I'm sure that was almost like a secondary benefit to what you initially set out to do. But David, you go along to lots of events, and like you were mentioning with the guy that you saw, you took him under your wing and you offered him a friendship, and you've been in contact ever since. So do you think we should all be doing a bit more to put ourselves out there to offer up our friendship should it be needed to people who are newly diagnosed or who have lived with diabetes their whole lives and haven't really, I guess, explored the diabetes community, which is rich and vibrant and diverse and a great thing that I myself have only recently discovered?
So I think at first it can be quite overwhelming to join a community where there's lots of people with diabetes because they're all chasing that perfect graph or posting perfect graphs and stuff like that. And obviously when you're first diagnosed, your sugars are high and they're all over the place. And this months later, they can still, or years later, they can still be all over the place until you're managed properly or able to get it to that certain point where you have good management of your sugar levels. But it can be quite daunting at first, I think. So if people are coming, if you see someone sitting alone at an event, then obviously go up to explain to them who you are and introduce yourself and be like, oh, come and join my friendship, we'll talk to you and stuff. But try not to overload them with information, I guess, because overloading them with information could be a good thing, but it could be a bad thing as well, if you get what I mean.
So I guess you guys could help me with a situation. So I have a friend, and I know he doesn't listen to this podcast because he only just found my Freestyle Libre video that was posted 3 years ago. He really struggles to take his condition seriously. Now, his personality type, he is not the most, attentive to detail type person. He's sort of very, very easygoing, very happy-go-lucky. And he does struggle with the need that diabetes has, the neediness of the condition. And I want to help, but I also don't want him to feel bad about not engaging too much with his condition, because that, I think, would do more harm than good. So when we went to Leeds Fest, and he didn't take a blood sugar monitor. So luckily I had a spare and I was able to give him that with loads of strips and all that sort of stuff. But that really shocked me. But then again, I didn't want to make him feel bad about his decision to not have one. And I know he's recently moved to Stevenage, and I'm just worried that he's removed himself from his appointments and care network and that sort of thing. So how would you guys, as people that are probably more experienced in this area than me, approach that issue? So you've got a friend that doesn't really get along with his diabetes. You've got to try and help him get better with that, but you don't want to make him feel bad. What do you do?
So that's just a really difficult one, because when I think back to when I was a teenager and I started going through the same stuff, and like I wouldn't take my equipment out, I wouldn't really test my blood sugars. I do it once a day, maybe. If anyone was to come up to me and be like, you need to test your blood sugar, I'd be like, no, go away. Don't tell me what to do. I think it's probably easier, instead of talking about diabetes, just talking to him as a person, asking what he's doing, and hoping that it comes into conversation, if anything else.
Yeah, because obviously that was a bit of a shocker moment when we were there unpacking, putting a tent up at Leeds Fest, and then I pulled out all my diabetes arsenal, all that rubbish out of my bag. Well, it's not rubbish, it's very grateful. Thank you, NHS. Thank you. But all of the stuff that I brought, and then he was like, oh, you brought that, have you? And I was like, well, of course I have. And I even bought myself a Freestyle Libre for the festival. And
now if I went anywhere about my stuff, I'd be panicking. I'd be like, oh no, I've left this at home. It's just difficult because it depends what sort of mindset someone's in.
Yeah, I agree. Or if you want to try and engage him more in his diabetes, just like once a week or maybe once every other week or once a month, go out for food with him and just like see what he does when you're out for food, and then somehow drop the, oh, do you carb coke bomb, and then, or something like that, and then build up a conversation around that, and then talk about educational courses and stuff like that, but do it like very slowly and very subtle, if you get what I mean.
Because what I don't want to do is scare this person off and because like I just feel like I'm in a bit of a privileged position, I think, with a very flexible job. I'm able to do regular activity. I've got quite a good hospital, so Western General Hospital, they have a fantastic diabetes department, and the nurses are great. It's a very small family feel, and they all know everyone personally, and they all, you know, follow me on Twitter and Instagram, and you know, they all like congratulate me and say, oh, lovely video last week, Jamie. And that's just a really nice feeling. And because I'm coming from this really, really nice positive experience, which he might not be experiencing, I don't want to stand there being like, oh, da, 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 you should be doing this, you should be doing this, because his experience might be totally different to mine. And I'm just very concerned that what am I taking for granted that he hasn't got? And I think that that's a wider issue, isn't it, with the way that this country deals with type 1 diabetes care. There's a massive disparity. It's a postcode lottery. You're going to get a different experience, I guess, even David, from living in England to living in Wales.
Yeah, so we're very lucky in Wales that like Libre was on prescription very, very quickly compared to like England. Literally majority of hospitals in Wales had it on prescription within by the end of the month when it was announced back in November 2017 or 2018, I can't remember exactly. So we was very lucky in Wales to have it like straight away, and there was people fighting on Twitter and saying that they can't get it and all this, and it's quite upsetting to watch that because I'm taking it for granted that I can have it, and then there's people struggling. And like, so that's why I went and asked how could I campaign to get Libre in England. Although I live in Wales, I was like, we need Libre for everyone, not just for those in Wales or anything. So I was lucky enough to be on BBC Breakfast and all this stuff to campaign and keep advocating for Libre Lotto and stuff like that. And then obviously now England is prescribing it, so it's really, really nice to see that people in England are actually getting it now. And it's like really heartwarming because in Wales everybody had it, and you could like, not everybody had it, but most people had it. There was obviously there is waiting lists and stuff, but like they were available on prescription. Like you could just go to your hospital, be like, oh, I want a Libre, and then they put you on the waiting list sort of thing. Well, if you met the criteria.
Well, the battle isn't won. I know friends, especially down in south, down south, living in London, who are finding it incredibly difficult to get prescribed. They're just sort of saying the answer that they're getting back is there's too many people down here. Sorry. Which is quite upsetting, and it just makes me, you know, feel very grateful for what I do have here in North Somerset, lovely sunny North Somerset. And I just wish everyone had the same opportunity to healthcare and adequate healthcare as me, because then we could talk about what the rest of the world is like. But we won't. We will leave that there for now. But if you did want to get in touch with us here at the show, you want to get involved in the conversation, you can. You can get in touch on the socials. Just search for All For One on your favourite social media platform and we'll probably be there. But now it's time for the latest news.
Boris Johnson has vowed to challenge the nanny state by pledging a review of evidence around sin taxes on unhealthy foods and beverages. The affected items would include the current sugar levy on the soft drinks industry, which has been proposed to be extended to sugary milk-based drinks such as milkshakes. Defending his position, Mr. Johnson said, "The recent proposal for a tax on milkshakes seems to me to clobber those who can least afford it," adding that the government should instead be encouraging more people to do exercise. A 9-year-old boy with type 1 diabetes has completed a major physical challenge in a bid to raise money to support his sick sister. Marley Pyle's sister Ellie has been diagnosed with Karska gene mutation, a rare condition which affects brain development and means she is confined to a wheelchair. So far, Marley and others have raised £1,500 by climbing the mountain Penny Fan. At 886 metres, it is the highest peak in South Wales. Marley has donated the money he raised to the hospice which his sister attends. Dexcom and Companion Medical have announced a collaboration to link up Dexcom data with insulin data from InPen into both companies' software applications. Dexcom and Companion Medical are working together to develop a seamless data transfer of both insulin and glucose information. The two companies hope this will improve the in-the-moment decisions for those managing their diabetes with multiple daily injections. And that's the latest news in the Type 1 world from me, Seb Whitehouse. Now back to the All For One podcast.
Thank you very much to Nerdabetic with his help collating this month's stories. On the other side of the break, we'll be revealing this month's type 1 to watch, and we'll have more of your thoughts on exercise and type 1 diabetes. Guys, Jamie here. Thank you so much for downloading the All For One podcast. Why not consider supporting this show and promote your brand or business in this airtime? You can contact us on contactallforone@gmail.com for more info. Or if not, consider supporting the podcast another way by following us on social media. We're on Instagram at All For One Insta and Twitter at All For One Tweets. Hello and welcome back to the All For One podcast. I'm Jamie Lowe and I'm here with Chris Brighty, Callie Roberts and David Stevens. And in a bit, we'll be heading to the Talking About Diabetes Tour and hearing some funny stories from workouts that went wrong. Don't forget to get in touch on social media. You can search for us on all the big platforms. We could really do with a few more followers, actually. But it's time now to reveal this month's Type 1 to Watch, someone doing great things for the community.
Hi, my name's Gavin Griffiths. I'm kind of known as the Diafleet because I live with type 1 diabetes and I've tackled some pretty crazy challenges, but I'm mainly focused on combining type 1 diabetes education with positive encouragement and empowerment. Last year, I took on my 100th endurance challenge by running 25 marathons in 1 month around the UK. So pretty extreme. The goal of that challenge wasn't so much just the running. I mean, that was a fair bit of running. But it was to try and reach local communities, reach local people like me living with type 1 diabetes, and get them involved in any possible way in something practical outdoors and engaging positive about diabetes. And yeah, going around the UK last year, we reached schools, we reached local communities, local support groups, all kinds of things like that. So it was a really engaging project and I survived. One agenda is to raise awareness about what type 1 diabetes actually is, because I don't feel that's too well known, particularly around schools where I struggled a lot, and that was 20 years ago. And I haven't seen too many changes, to be honest, in some areas of the country where schools is concerned. You know, a lot of people do struggle there. It's not easy to cope with something that makes you feel a bit different. So A is reaching those communities, not just the people with diabetes, but giving them the empowerment, but also those without it to understand it a little bit better. Raising that kind of awareness to other people, not just that with a challenge like diabetes, you can actually work with this condition and it's in your hands long term to actually go and live a full and healthy life. But away from that, you know, anybody needs that positive message of empowerment. So this was the challenge that came into my life, type 1 diabetes. Everybody's different. Everybody's going to have their own individual challenges. So I think what we lack, particularly in the media, is a bit of encouragement these days. So if some crazy man running or doing some challenges and getting a bit of awareness about it can help people find that, then the better it is for the country and the world.
Gavin Griffiths there, our type 1 to watch for this month. So if you are or you know someone doing something cool for the community, then get in touch on the email, which is contactall41@gmail.com. You or they could be our next type 1 to watch. But now it's time to head to the TAD on Tour event, or Talking About Diabetes as it's more formally known. The TAD Talk concept was brought to life by three doctors who specialise in diabetes and want to support and empower those with the condition to achieve their potential and live well. This year was the first time that it went on tour, and I was there at the Bristol event. Over the past few weeks, we've had a fair few sellout tours in Bristol. We had Take That, and more recently, we had the Spice Girls. Well, tonight, I'm going to a sellout tour that's a little bit different.
Although no musicians will be taking to the stage here at the Wills Memorial Building, each of the speakers at the Talking About Diabetes on Tour event is a star in their own right.
So the event is for people to come along and share their stories of the incredible things that they've done living with diabetes. And of course, everybody with type 1 diabetes is doing incredible things every single day.
Paul Coker runs a website which helps people with type 1 diabetes get into sport and is one of three inspirational speakers sharing their stories of the incredible things that they've done whilst living with type 1 diabetes.
For me, you know, I climbed Kilimanjaro. I did 40 half marathons in a year, which is just nonsense in anybody's book. and there are other people here. There's a professional cyclist, and we've got a sprinter here. But really, it's about the people coming here and networking with each other to share their experiences of living with type 1 diabetes. And it's about turning the attitude of, I can't do that, I've got diabetes too, I can do that.
And that can-do attitude is what helped to propel athlete Mel Stevenson-Gray into her sporting career after receiving her diagnosis at the age of 13.
So my speech tonight focuses on the skills that I feel having diabetes brings us. So it'd be quite easy to focus on the negatives of having diabetes because it's not the easiest condition in the world to live with. However, I feel that it's kind of brought skills like resilience, like motivation, like determination that you might not necessarily kind of consider, but actually for me, they've been really beneficial in my sporting career. I think tonight it'll be, the biggest benefit will be the shared experience because there'll be some people who've never met anybody else with diabetes before, and there'll be people that are already established members of the diabetes community, but it doesn't matter either way because it's about sharing each other's experiences and coming together.
And my doctor said, yeah, it's safe for him. You know, he lives with type 1 diabetes, just like you.
Talking about diabetes, or TAD for short, is an initiative started by three doctors which is aiming to get people to think differently about diabetes. And at this particular event in Bristol, sport and diabetes is the focus. Amongst the accomplished athletes taking to the stage is former professional cyclist Justin Morris, who now travels the world giving talks on how he maintained a professional sports career and type 1 diabetes.
Travel gives you perspective. And as someone living with type 1 diabetes, sometimes it takes that dose of perspective to realise how good we do have it, particularly in countries like the United Kingdom, particularly in countries like my own one, Australia. We really do have access to the epitome of resources as far as diabetes is concerned. And seeing the state of many other countries in the world and the resources they have at their disposal for type 1 diabetes, it makes you very appreciative of what you've got and that you do have those resources. I call them like rungs in the ladder to our dreams.
Though he may have hung up his helmet, Justin now works as a global ambassador for his former cycling team.
Team Novo Nordisk is the world's first ever professional sports team where all of the athletes on the team live with the challenge of type 1 diabetes. Recently, we just were racing in the biggest bike race in America, the Tour of California, which is classified as a world tour race. So it really is the epitome of the sport. And to be able to not just be there, but compete there at the highest level whilst dealing with the challenges of type 1 diabetes really proves that type 1 diabetes is just that, is a challenge, is not a barrier to pursue your dreams in life.
Chris, I guess, has anyone approached you to do talks and stuff? Because it seems to me that's only a natural progression with someone who's founded a sports team, especially for people with diabetes. You must be just one step away from motivational speeches.
I have done a few now, to be fair. I did Rise of the Machines conference earlier in the year. Again, organised by one of the doctors that organises TAD. We exhibited TDFC at TAD as well, which is always a really great, like David said, it's an amazing event, getting people together like that, and then being able to network with them. It's the best part about what we do as well, and I thoroughly enjoy it. I've done a couple of speeches for JDRF at Discovery Days as well. It's something that I don't think I ever thought I'd be doing, but I think it comes, like you say, it comes a little bit with sometimes the territory of when you're trying to put change out there and you're trying to make something happen. Standing up and talking to people seems to be the most powerful mechanism to change. People really come with you. People really feel the passion you have, the motivation you have for it. And I was a nervous speaker at the very start, and I'm not going to say that I'm not nervous now, but I certainly, things have got a little easier as I've got used to it.
Absolutely. And do you know what? This year is a year when I really gave myself a mission, because as someone that works in the media, like day to day, I'm a TV news reporter. So I really gave myself the task of putting as much diabetes on the air as I possibly could. So now what you've got is when you do like found a diabetes football team, or you do do a speech at an event like this, you'll have me there with a camera asking to talk to you afterwards. So get ready for that, because I'll be there. So Callie and David, as people who are quite big on social media, you know, you are that constant voice for people to always rely on when they need a bit of a pick-me-up or a bit of, you know, just solace of other people with type 1 diabetes. But is that why you do it? Do you just like sharing anyway, or do you do it because you think that someone out there is going to see it when they really need to see it?
Yeah, when I started off my Instagram account, I actually did it for me, more thinking that, oh, I'll be able to see what other people are doing, this will push me to do a bit better. And I didn't actually think that the Instagram account would get to where it is now, actually. It's a bit of a shock.
And what about you, David? Because you have been posting for ever since I was diagnosed, yeah?
Yeah, I've been on Twitter for quite a while, and Facebook and everything else. I feel like a really old person, but not really. I've only had diabetes for 9 years. But I used social media at first as an outlet for like just to get stuff off my mind when I was diagnosed, because I was basically told, hey, you got diabetes, do an injection in the morning, do an injection in the night, and on your way. So I didn't really know much about diabetes, and I used it as a place to like go for comfort or just to try and get information and stuff. But that later made me like angry, because I was seeing people posting like perfect lines, and seeing people, not lines, but saying that they've had good sugar days, their HbA1c was really good, and like they've got insulin pumps and stuff like this. And when I spoke to my team about all the technology and stuff, because I'm quite a guy that wants technology, I don't want to do injections, I like having an insulin pump, I like all the technology aspects of life. And they were like, no, you can't have one. So it took me 3.5 years to fight for my insulin pump. And then when I finally got one, my life changed for the better. And I was always asking, like, could I go on a pump? And they were like, no, children get it first and stuff like that, which I totally get, that children should get stuff first, I guess, because it helps stop complications. But I was diagnosed as an adult then. So I was diagnosed when I was 19. And I should have a right to have an insulin pump as quick as a child does, as if it's going to stop complications later on in life, if you get what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. So Callie and David, you keep posting away. Chris, you're quite busy on social media too. That's how I discovered you. Well, actually, no, it was Zoe Lavery. Well, I followed you before that, but Zoe Lavery, a listener to the show, who I'm hoping to get on to a future episode, she said, you need to get Chris on the podcast. And I did. And thank you, Chris, for being on the podcast. But let's turn to social media once more and see what listeners have been sending in about today's discussion topic. Laura Taylor said, I'm a runner and I had a hypo mid-run in the middle of the New Forest. And because I chose my low snack to be a penguin bar and it was in my running belt, and it was a hot day, the chocolate had completely melted. So I ate the chocolate bar in a desperate mess, got it all over my white running top and on my cheeks. Somehow I came home and my parents found it quite amusing. So chocolate bars in a small running belt are a bit of a nightmare. And I had Haribo. I had Haribo in my running belt. And does anyone else have this? So you'll buy a load of Haribo for a hypo treatment, and then you'll maybe not need them. And then when you come to need them, they're like rock hard and they taste like old stale Haribo. Has anyone experienced that yet?
Yeah.
I'm lucky that I know people that go to Germany quite often and they go visit the Haribo factory. So I get lots of Haribo for really, really cheap. But by the time they get here and stuff, they're perfectly fine. But they're just sitting around and I'm like, oh, they'll be fine. I'll use them as hypo treatments. And then by the time I've gone to get another packet or something, they've like gone really horrible. And I'm like, great, I guess this is to make me not eat as many or something. So I just use it like so. I'll only eat like half of the bag, so if I'm hypo, so it's just like a thing to put me off eating the full bag, because if they were really nice and tasty, then I'm going to eat the full bag and then I'm going to have a post high after my sugars. So.
Yeah, my hypo snacks are always quite gross. I just feel like because they've been in bags and things and they've been in warm places, so I think like some of the flavour from the plastic migrates onto the sweet somehow. But either way, they were absolutely disgusting when I was running the Swansea Half Marathon. But anyway, we'll leave hypo treats there. We'll go on to Meg Buckle, who is the diabetic dog walker who messaged in to say that she just did a skydive with her insulin pump attached and they both survived. So congratulations to you and your insulin pump, Meg. Oh, here she is, Zoe Lavery. She's messaging. She's the one that got you on this podcast, Chris. She's the one who got you into all this. She said the exercise massively helped her mentally once she got diagnosed. She said she uses the One Bloody Drop website and has learned a lot from their running team. She ran a marathon 3 months after being diagnosed, and that's just incredible, isn't it? But she also mentioned that on the 2018 Swansea Half Marathon, all of her running pictures were of her in a bush throwing up because she ate too many jelly babies.
We've all been there.
I think. Yeah, yeah. What's everyone's hypo treatment of choice?
It was jelly babies, but I found that a shop or a pharmacy has got the new dextrose tablets with the new brand Lift on them, and they've got them really cheap at the moment. So I bought like 50 for a pound, and I'm like, yes, give them one. So I went to everyone around by me to get them, and they've all sold out everywhere. And I'm like, okay, so I've only got one tub. So I went to Cardiff today to get some, and they weren't there. And I was like, I've just gone to Cardiff to just get hypo supplies, and you don't have any. So yeah.
Well, David's saga of his dextrose tablets continues. What about Chris and Callie? What do you use as a hypo snack to hand?
I love Starburst. I do. Always eating Starburst because I've just started running. Nice. And I found out, obviously, when I'm running, if I'm having a hypo, they're the worst thing because I'm trying to, like, fiddle, taking off the wrapper. It's just an absolute
wrappers,
disaster.
Yeah, never good.
What you're going to have to do is put them in a pouch, like, take the wrappers off and put it in, like, a pouch, like a Skittles pouch, just so you don't have to unwrap them whilst running.
Too much work, too much planning.
Or just eat them with the wrappers on.
Yes, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, just eat the paper.
Chris, what about you?
I use Glucotabs, so very similar to what David was talking about with the Lift. I use those because there's science behind it and some practicality, because obviously I need to be like super planned for sport and situations. The tub actually tells you how many grams is in each glucose tab, so I know exactly how much is going in my mouth at any one time. So if I have three, I know it's about 12 grams. So I'm doing some science with how much, because I don't want to overdo it, especially if it's in a sporty situation, because I need to get into a certain range for performance where I don't want to be too high or too low. So I'm trying to find that gap. And then also at the same time, because of the tube that the Glucotab sit in is durable, that it means that if it's wet or I'm running in the rain or I'm out playing football and it's just the conditions are awful, I know they're going to survive and they're not going to be damaged so much by the elements. Whereas and also there is a bit of me that thinks I don't want to be having sweets because they taste too good and then I'll overdo it. So I kind of have something that's a bit chalky and they are pretty nice, but they're not sweet nice. So they're a job. They're like doing a job for me rather than, I don't treat myself in my hypo, if that makes sense. Some people
smart.
Like to use a hypo
very
as a
smart.
Treat.
Yeah, I definitely do that. I've definitely
in
the past.
I find the dextrose tablets like a sweet though. So after I've had like three, I'm like, I want more. I don't know why.
Yeah,
see. I really like them. But then I found out that you can choke on them really quickly as well. So it's not a good thing.
Well, that took a turn, didn't it? But anyway, on the topic of diet buddies, Em's Finnemore said she doesn't have any diet buddies, but she would love one. She's on Instagram, folks, as Em's Finnemore. So go ahead and show her some love. But thank you to everyone who's been getting in touch this month for this episode. But that does bring us to the end of the All For One podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on your favourite podcast app. Please leave us a review and share it with your friends and family. If you want to get involved in the conversation, you can get in touch on the socials. We're on Instagram at All For One Insta. We're on Twitter at All For One Tweets and Facebook at All For One Online, or you can email into the show. That's contactallforone@gmail.com. Don't forget to listen out for our bonus episode where I'll be chatting to Gavin Griffiths, the diathlete who's our Type 1 to watch this month, a bit more about his incredible work. That will be coming out mid-July. And I've also got a brand new TV show coming out very soon that's airing on Travel XP, which is channel 93 on your Freeview, somewhere near the bottom. But nevertheless, that is there. And you can see me going wild and very cold on a month-long journey around Norway. That's on the 14th of July. I haven't been given a time yet, so check out my social medias at Jamie Lowe TV if you'd like to see that. I'd be very grateful if you did tune in. I'm hoping that they'll send me to another country soon, but fingers crossed, and toes. But a special thanks goes to Paul Coker for convincing me to run a half marathon. And of course, to today's incredible panel, we've had Chris Brighty, Callie Roberts and David Stevens. I've been Jamie Lowe and this was the Awful One podcast. I'll see you next time.